Hey, I'm Sarah Bivens.
And I'm Matthew Bivens.
And this is the Doing It at Home podcast, the only podcast dedicated to empowering, loving, and honest conversations around home birth. What started as a fun way for us to document our own home birth journey has turned into a platform for sharing birth stories, resources, and education with the goal of empowering mamas and families to make the birth decisions that work best for them.
Plus, we get into the antics, breakdowns, and breakthroughs of our own experience of marriage and parenthood.
All right. You ready, babe?
Yep. Let's do it, mama.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the podcast and to another beautiful birth story. We have a really great episode for you today. I'm very excited for you to hear it. Before that, reminders, you're doing it at home shirts. Go get them. I got mine in the mail today and I'm so excited. It's awesome. It's soft. It's comfortable. It says have babies where you make them in a really cool graphic designed by one of our friends, Rachel Cunningham, who we actually had on the show, aka the dope doula. It's just so cool. And all of you are sending photos as you're getting your shirts, your hoodies, your tanks, whatever you got. It's so exciting. It just lights us up to see you all out there repping the Doing It at Home podcast and your empowering home birth conversation starter pieces of clothing. It's so cool. So if you want to order yours, go to bonfire.com/store/DIAH podcast, or you can go to our Instagram page. It is the profile link currently in our Instagram. And there's a link in today's episode show notes. So lots of ways in which you can get to the site, check out the shop, see what you like, different colors, different styles. Like I said, tees, tanks, long sleeve, sweatshirt, hoodies, all there for you, and get them right now so you can have them in time for the holidays for gifts for your midwife, doula, fellow birth junkie, mama, friend, extraordinaire. And so, it's just really awesome. Like I said, they're super dope shirts and you rep the show and support the show. So we certainly appreciate that, you know, to keep the show running and to, you know, all of that, all those things that, you know, how it goes. And another thing, if you dig the conversation on the Doing It at Home podcast, if you appreciate the empowering energy and what we provide as far as, you know, birth, pregnancy, even postpartum conversations, I have a feeling that you would dig my podcast, the Balance and Motherhood podcast. And that's me, just me on the mic riffing about all sorts of things, balance and motherhood related, from all of it, guys. Like, there's really nothing I won't go into. So just to give you an idea, some of the recent episodes I did dealing with hot boiling mom rage, ways to celebrate yourself, sexual healing with Matthew, actually brought him in on an episode, or it was one that we did on his podcast, but then I shared it on my show. All sorts of amazing things there for you to tap into and to continue that conversation, you know, as a mama, how you are connecting with yourself, how you're connecting with your identity, how you're working on the relationship to stress and anxiety around you, you know, really easy to get caught up in that. So go check out Balance and Motherhood podcast. You can find it in Apple Podcasts or iTunes, Google Play, pretty much any podcast player, or you can go to my website, sarahbivens.com, and subscribe, check it out, see what you think, hit me up, would love to connect. Okay, today's birth story. So you probably hear us say wow a lot when we are interviewing mamas about their birth stories, just because we're totally taken aback sometimes, or we're just in total awe or inspiration for these women and these powerful stories, right? Well, this one should have a wow counter on it. If anyone out there actually counts the wows, send that number to us, because I would love to know what the actual count is, but it's a lot. Let me just say that. We're talking with Sophia Williams, and Sophia is a midwife, a doula, and a published photographer. So we talked to Sophia about her entrance into birth work, into the birth world, and then how becoming a doula and eventually studying to become a midwife influenced her own birthing choices. And there are some twists throughout Sophia's journey, from a home birth with her son Benjamin to her post-birth hospital transfer for a placenta removal, and then actually back to the hospital later for baby Benjamin, which would take them on a road over several months, up to a year, in fact, of Vactral association and working on healing Benjamin, getting him the care and multiple surgeries throughout that year. So we go into that. We've never talked about Vactral association on the show before. So for those who never heard of it, you're going to learn a little bit about it, or for those who are familiar or who have been impacted by it, this will resonate. And then throughout that process, when Benjamin was 8 months old, Sophia became pregnant again with their second child, their daughter Gracie, who was eventually born premature via cesarean. So Sophia has this really well-rounded, inspiring, awesome perspective as a midwife herself, first of all, but then also having experienced home birth and hospital birth. So I won't say anything else. I will let you listen to the rest. It's incredibly inspiring. And Sophia is such a light and strong, powerful mama that we're so grateful to have a part of the community and for her to share her story. So here it is.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Hi, Sophia.
Good morning.
What's up, Sophia? Sarah and I are so happy that you would join us on the Doing It at Home podcast. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Awesome. Sophia, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your family?
Sure. I am a midwife located in California. I live in Sonoma County with my husband, Spencer, and our two kids, Benji, which he told me he prefers Benji now over Benjamin, and Gracie. When they start to get their preferences, right?
Yeah, of course.
So Ben is 3.5 and Gracie is almost 2 in a couple weeks.
Mm, awesome. That's so cool. Happy early birthday, Gracie.
Yeah.
So, midwifery. Tell us a little bit about what got you into that work and then kind of the path that you took as far as how you became a midwife.
Sure. I was a nanny and I nannied for a family that had a home birth. And
wow.
I was in the middle of I wanted to be a nurse and help people that way. And I thought, ooh, labor and delivery, like you get to see everyone on the happiest day of their lives versus the worst day if you're in any other area of the hospital. But then when I heard about that, I was like, wait, you can do that? That's legal? That's amazing. I want to be a midwife. And then somebody suggested I become a doula. And so I did some training when I realized it was much cheaper to become a doula. And I sat in a circle of 15 other women at my training and they went around the circle. Why do you want to be a doula? And this was like 9-10 years ago. I hadn't had children yet. And literally everyone said, I had a really traumatic experience and I want to make sure that nobody else goes through what I went through and feels educated. And they got to me and I was like, I like babies. I thought this would be fun. But I left that training shocked because I was doing this because it was going to be the happiest day of everyone's life. And not one woman in that room had that experience. And so I knew like, well, even if I don't do this as a career, I want to have kids. I want to have the happiest day of my life. I don't want to have this horrible experience. So I dedicated myself to research right then. I wanted to know what all my options were. And eventually I did decide that I did love this work. And I went to midwifery school and I studied and I had babies and I'm a midwife now, licensed in California, and that's kind of my goal is that, you know, no matter how or where you have your baby, that you feel like you are the one making the final decision and that you get to call the shots because it's your birth and your baby, and that that's what leads to feeling empowered and having a powerful experience, not necessarily how your baby was born or where they were born, because there are some things that are totally out of your control. So that's kind of what my focus is as a birth keeper, is just making sure everyone doesn't come back and says, I didn't even know that was an option. I would have done things differently if I had known, you know, that they feel they have all the options available to them.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I'm curious, you know, you do this amazing work. How do you feel that you and we and other people in the birth world can get the message out about options and can help educate folks? Because, you know, you said when you were sitting in that circle of women when you're going through your training, that the idea of home birth was not really on your radar until it was literally in front of your face with the family you nannied for. So how can people learn about it? How can people learn about their options is basically what I'm asking.
Yeah, I kind of have this dream of, you know, when girls start their cycle for the first time, their parents take them to a midwife for their well woman care, and they get the experience that way. Because if their very first experience of getting their PAPs and getting their annual checkups is going to an OB, then that's where they're going to go when they're pregnant, you know. But if they know there is this other side of care, you know, if everything is healthy and, you know, obviously if there's any sort of, you know, abnormal results for anything, then you go see a specialist. But, you know, why not go to a midwife's office and have an hour to talk and have this gentle, loving, you know, PAP experience and talk about your history as a teenage girl, you know, growing up and having that experience. I think that's where it's going to start for people. That's kind of my hope and vision for the future.
Wow. I'm taking notes. I'm thinking about 10, 13 years from now when we're having conversations with Maya as her body changes. I'm like, that's brilliant.
Isn't it? I mean, you know, if you send them right to an OB at the very beginning, then where do you think they're going to go when they have anything else going on?
Totally. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Wow.
Because, yeah, lots. I mean, not every midwife offers well women care, but mm-hmm. most do.
Right.
And they all definitely have the ability to, even if they, you know, don't advertise it. We've talked actually with a group of midwives in the area, the idea of offering like clinics once a month, you know, free clinics for PAPs and things like that, and encouraging, you know, having like educational videos playing in the waiting room and things like that. Nothing actually happened necessarily because we're all very busy, but we all love the idea of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. And I'm just thinking back, you know, to when my cycle started and you're figuring out what is going on inside your body. Not that all OB offices are like this, but I'm sure there are a fair few where you go and now it's this kind of sterilized, medicalized process. And I think that's where you start to learn what's happening to your body is like a medical event to be managed and by someone mm-hmm. else. So I just think about where I might not have even realized. And now if I were to take a look back, I'm sure there were seeds being planted or groundwork being laid down to just think about any part of what my body was doing in its womanly way as like needing someone else to tell me what to do about it or that it needed to be managed in some way.
Right. Exactly. Like, you know, as you guys experience, even with prenatals, they're usually extensively longer than they would be at the OB office just because yes. they don't have the time, you know, they don't have the time for the education, aspect. Whereas if you were to go to a midwife for, you know, when you first start your cycle, how long does a PAP take? Not very long, you know, if you wanted to do that. But the rest of the appointment is about like, so what are you noticing with your body? Like, you know what that means, you know, the education side of it, so that she knows that she can, you know, it means that you're fertile. And what does that mean? And you can actually track your cycles. You can like start to predict when your cycle is going to start. And, you know, that giving them the power, you know, handing it back to them.
Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
I love it.
Yeah, as a dad to a baby girl, I'm very grateful to you for exposing that option, because I definitely did not Did not even think about that. Didn't even know. So that's cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Sophia, tell us a little bit about your birth planning when you realized you were first pregnant, and then just kind of walk us through, you know, the prenatal experience of either both. You could jump in and out if you want, or just like first time and then what you took from that and applied to second, however you want to flow.
Yeah, we'll do chronological. It's awesome. Easier for my brain. So I am blessed that I was a student midwife by the time I got pregnant with my first. So I never had to do the battle of, oh, I don't want to tell my family or what will they say. I think honestly, people would have been shocked if I had chose to birth anywhere other than my home. It was expected. So I got nothing but support my whole pregnancy. Maybe a couple strangers, like, you know, opinions, but that didn't bother me at all. So I planned to have our baby at home. And I actually found out when I was in Hawaii, we conceived in a hospital, a hotel room, San Francisco. And then I flew to Hawaii to support my cousin who was having her baby.
Oh, wow.
And so she had her baby at home with me. And then a couple of days later, I actually went to her chiropractor for an appointment because my back was tweaked. And she told me, are you trying to get pregnant? Because I think you are. And at that point, I probably would have been maybe between 2 and 3 weeks. Like no tests were saying I was. And of course, I started bawling on the table because this was our first time trying. So it wasn't like, I can't even imagine people who have fertility struggles. So found out I was pregnant. So Spencer flew over right away to celebrate. And I started spotting around 5 weeks, which I knew could be normal. And I actually ended up going to the ER at 11 weeks when I like filled a toilet bowl full of blood. And everything showed up fine. The placenta looked fine. The baby looked fine. And I continued to bleed for till 28 weeks with nobody knowing what was going on, just that everything seemed to be moving along. I got very clear what I wanted from my birth, from all my experiences. I think I had been to like at least 120 births at that point. And I was like, you know, I want to wake up after a perfect night's sleep. I want to be well rested when my labor starts. I want it to be obvious that my labor is starting. I want it to be very clear to me. And I don't want it to be too fast. That looks really overwhelming. I don't want it to be so long. I'm exhausted. Like 6 hours would be awesome. And I just want it to go smooth. And I want to keep my placenta because I was processing placentas at that time and wanted to experience that. So I woke up with my water breaking all over the bed at 9 a.m. after a good night's sleep. And 6 hours later, he was born in the tub in her bedroom. Oh, sorry. 6 hours and 11 minutes. So he was a little late.
Yeah, yeah.
But pretty exactly what I wanted. And I just did every appointment with my midwife. I just kept saying, okay, so here's what's going to happen. Not even what I hoped to happen. I was just telling them exactly how it was going to go. Because I just figured if I just keep holding on to the vision, it'll happen. If I just keep picturing it and telling everyone like it's already been done, it'll happen. And it did. And it was the most amazing experience of my whole life still. To date, it was incredible. You know, I reached down and I caught him, and we just laid in the tub with our baby, and it was incredible. And both my parents were there, and my dad was filming, and my mom was holding my hands, and one of my best friends was there, who was also a student midwife at the time, and another one of my friends. And of course, I had a photographer. I'm a photographer, and I knew. Actually, my husband called a photographer before the midwife because I knew I wanted definitely so her there no matter what. I didn't care if anyone else made it, but I wanted that on video. Yeah. So we have amazing photos from the experience. And then my placenta didn't come out. I think we tried for about 4 hours and I wasn't bleeding heavily. There was no emergency. You know, my midwife at the time was just like, you can't keep it.
Right, like, right.
There's no emergency, but like, we got to make a plan. And we tried a bunch of things at home. We tried to manually remove it twice, which was way more painful than labor. And we opted to transport. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get up and go to the car, but every time I did, my bleeding just really picked up. Mm-hmm. So we ended up calling an ambulance. And I took the ambulance, and I was still like, I feel fine. I don't feel like, you know, I'm not worried or anything. We just kind of wanted to be done with it. So we went, and they kind of said, okay, just check the baby real quick, the most important things, and then let's get to the hospital. Got to the hospital. The placenta was able to be removed without being in the OR or anything. Oh, they gave me, like, fentanyl to help relax me. Mm-hmm. And it came out, and then I just cuddled my baby for a little bit while the medication wore off, and we went home. And then when we got home and we unwrapped him, getting ready to do a really thorough newborn exam, I noticed that his breathing was off. And I thought maybe he just, you know, maybe I'm just a nervous first-time parent. Maybe he needs to see a little action, you know, maybe he's got some fluid in his lungs. We ended up transporting him to a hospital, and they gave him some oxygen and he came around. And then when they started doing their thorough newborn exam, they went to check his temperature rectally and he had no anal openings. And wow. As a student midwife, we checked for this all the time. Is the anus patent? But I never stopped to think about what it would mean if it wasn't. And now it was my baby. And so I was like, okay, so now we're transporting to the city to get an evaluation. And I still thought, I'm very optimistic. I was like, okay, so they're going to cut a hole and he'll heal and then we'll go home. And then meconium started coming out of his penis. And I couldn't even wrap my mind around how that was possible.
Yeah.
I just knew it wasn't normal.
Right.
So we got to UCSF. Mission Bay campus. And then they started asking us about heart conditions. Do heart conditions run in your family? And we were like, wait, we're the butthole parents.
Wrong one.
We're not the heart parents. Yeah. But they knew that that can be connected to heart conditions, which he did have, along with a lot of other things. So it turned out he has a condition called VACTRL association. And it's an acronym that stands for all the areas of the body that can have birth defects. And if your child has three of them, you are considered to have VACTRL, at least three. And then how you showcase it, because you could have 100 children with VACTRL and it could all show up differently for them. You capitalize the V, lowercase the A, capitalize the C. So whatever's capitalized, the child has a defect in that area. So Benjamin has all of them except for the last one. So V is any vertebrae issues. His spinal cord, which runs, you know, floats freely for us, was tethered to his spinal column. A is anal. So he had no anal opening and his rectum was connected to his urethra. C is cardiac. He has tetralogy of Fallot with a vascular ring, which means his aorta wrapped around his esophagus and trachea. And tetralogy of Fallot, that's the one that Sean White has and Jimmy Kimmel's son has. I think those are the two most famous cases. And then T is tracheal, tracheal stuff, which he has two left lungs. So his right lung should have three lobes.
Wow.
And it only has two. And then everything's very narrow. And then E is esophageal. He kind of really doesn't have that. They thought he had some like floppiness. He had some failure to thrive and struggles with eating early on. But I think that was all pretty much ruled out. There's no like structural abnormalities. R is renal. He had renal reflux until his spinal cord was released and that got resolved. And the last one is L, it's limb deformities. And he has none of those. And if you looked at a picture of him, if you saw him in person, you wouldn't know that he had six surgeries the first year of his life. you couldn't even tell. He's just a normal three-year-old little boy that gets wheezy when he's sick sometimes.
Yeah.
And that was our first year with Ben.
Holy wow. I mean, I don't even know how many minutes ago, but not long, you know, we're saying the most amazing experience of my life and still, you know, still is. And then coming right at the tail of that is having to process all of these new unexpected things. And I'm sure you, I mean, what are you even doing then? Like, you're buckling down for, okay, how long? What's the extent? Like, all of this. And then for to go out over the next year, six surgeries on a newborn, that's incredibly, I don't even insert whatever word you want there. And I'm sure you had a lot to fill in there, but just, I don't know. That's wild.
Yeah. And I would think the hardest part was, like, in my Vactrol group on Facebook, which, you know, thank God for Facebook for times like these where you can reach out to everyone in the world who can relate. But they were saying that Vactrol, like in, you know, a joking, funny way, Vactrol is the gift that keeps on giving because you don't find out about it all right away.
Okay.
It just slowly reveals itself. So we spent, I think, 9 or 10 months discovering new things. That was the hardest part because it got to the point where I was like, okay, I just want to know what it all is so we can process it and get through it. I don't want to keep finding more things. That was the hard part.
Where
my mom would look and go, my mom would say, I remember when he was a brand new baby and we were at UCSF and she'd say, does his chest look funny? Does his side look bigger than the other? And I was like, Mom, stop looking for more stuff. But I mean, 9 months later, it turned out she was right. He did have a lung condition. But yeah, I'd say that was the hardest part. And, you know, I'm in therapy processing it all. I have been for a while and that's great. And, you know, I kept telling everyone that I'm honestly the perfect person for this to happen to. Not that it happened to me, but that I can be the advocate for Ben because I'm, you know, as a doula, I'm a professional advocate and I cut out for me with him. And, you know, doctors are amazing. Nurses are amazing. And, you know, I had to stay on top of it all. There were slip ups and, you know, things that I caught and times where I was like, you know, I don't think that's the right choice for him. And I want to go a different route and, you know, picking the right care team for him. I ended up getting donor milk for him for 2 years. And, you know, anywhere from sneaking it into the hospital to finally we told them that we are bringing donor milk in and that they were just going to have to be okay with that. And, you know, we had lots of family meetings because we wanted to do things very different than they were used to. But they're a teaching hospital and they were amazing. And they really listened to us and heard us and they wanted to give, you know, to supplement the breast milk with some formula because his heart was working so fast. He wasn't gaining weight and they needed some extra calories. And I wasn't comfortable with the formulas they had. And I said, you know, it has this ingredient in it and that causes intestinal inflammation. Like, is that something we really want to give him? And the doctor looked at me and said, I don't think that's something we want to give any baby. Wow. And they actually now carry the formula that I suggested that they carry at that hospital.
Awesome.
So they really are great and they really do listen. They're amazing.
Yeah.
And we actually ended up naming Ben after his first surgeon that did his surgery.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yes. Yeah. So yeah, that was, you know, I had the most amazing support, you know, meal trains, anything I wanted. Like I said, 2 years of breast milk for Ben donated. And just anytime we had any struggles, I mean, my parents' work said, go come back when you're ready. And they both basically lived with us at the hospital each of them for a month. So we just had all the support we could have ever asked for. We met some families at the hospital where I'm like, she's a single mom and she's got 3 kids. I don't know how she's going to do it because that's the only option she has, but I don't know how she's going to be through it all.
Yeah.
You know, we were just so blessed.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And talking about you and Spencer through this, you know, it sounds like you both had a lot of support. How are you supporting and being there for one another?
Yeah, we couldn't really be at first because we were so focused on Ben, but that's where my parents' role came in. My mom just, I mean, I was newly postpartum, you know, having to recover, and she just took care of me every step of the way. My dad focused on Spencer, and they just, you know, took care of the parents basically so we could focus on Ben. And that was the best thing ever because we didn't even really have time for each other. And luckily, we work really well together, Spencer and I. I'm very, I can hold it all together. I can hold it together 6 months if I need to and do what needs to get done. And then I'll like process and grieve later. And he's kind of the opposite. He like really, you know, processes at first, but he can hold it together long term when I need to crumble. So we just would tag team. I think at one point, we were there for a month at first. The nurse looked to us and said, okay, so the next time you put Ben down, you know, let me know and I'll do all his vitals. And we kind of like cocked our head, like, put him down? What is that? Put him down? What does that mean? We don't put him down. Like, my parents are here. Like, we just hand him off to somebody else. Like, he doesn't get put down. So he never, you know, he always had us with him unless he was in surgery at every step of the way. Even when they were like, you don't want to be holding him during this blood draw, like, trust me, don't want him to associate you with it. And I was like, I'm holding him, like, we're gonna be right here the whole time. And then Ben was 8 months old, not done with his surgeries yet, when we found out I was pregnant.
Wow.
And I think that was the hardest part. We weren't really ready. We hadn't even decided if, because of all this, like, we want to have more children. But we just figured, you know, this baby was telling us it was okay. And, you know, like, if they had given us enough time to think about it, we might have made the wrong choice. So we just joked, like, well, it's already hard. Why would we wait till we were sleeping through the night to start again? Like, let's just keep going. Like, that would be silly. Let's just get it all out of the way. So I was pregnant going through the last couple surgeries, and it really just passed by quickly because I was just so focused on him still. And but honestly, hadn't really taken time to take care of myself. I mean, I had heavy bleeding the whole 6 weeks postpartum, all the way up to starting my period at 6 weeks. So I just felt really drained the whole pregnancy, the whole second pregnancy. I remember at 10 weeks, I was like, I'm done. I don't want to be pregnant anymore. I'm so tired. Mm-hmm. And then come to find out, you know, we tested my iron levels and my iron was really low. Like, my midwife said, you might need a blood transfusion if you were to give birth right now. Like, we need to get this iron level up, which is probably why I was so tired. Mm-hmm. So we worked on it and we worked on it. And then at around 30 weeks, I started having these really bad back pains, and I actually didn't catch that it was preterm labor. My midwife asked me to time them, and I was like, what? Time back pain? I was like, oh, okay. And they were every 4 minutes. So I had half a glass of wine, and they took an Epsom salt bath per midwife's orders, and they stopped. And they ended up coming and going. And every time I would just take a bath, and they would stop again. And I was able to stay pregnant until 35 weeks and 6 days. So legally in California, you can have your baby at home at 37 weeks. So we were like a little over a week shy. And I was in the tub, you know, with the Epsom salts. And then I was like, this is it. It's not stopping. This is, you know, we're going to have a baby. And I honestly wasn't scared at all. I remember jumping out of the tub and Spencer and I hugged and we were smiling, like, oh my gosh, we're going to have a baby today. And we hopped in the car and, oh my God, we're 5 minutes in the hospital. It was the longest 5 minutes of my life. I was sure this baby was going to be born in the car. It was so uncomfortable. And I was like kneeling on the floor of the front seat, like leaning over the seat because there was no way I was sitting. Oh my gosh. And we got to the hospital and I had actually established care at the local birth center when we knew I was having preterm labor at 30 weeks okay. because they are certified nurse midwives and they can go to the hospital with their clients and continue care at the hospital. They have privileges at the hospital. And my midwife was a licensed midwife who doesn't have privileges at the hospital. So I knew that I wanted to develop a relationship with someone who could continue care with me at the hospital and be on my team and be able to, you know, be a peer with the doctors who were at the hospital and have that like reputation and experience there. So I'm grateful for that because I had two midwives with me when I was at the hospital.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And one of them was a peer of the hospital. So she, you know, when she said something, it just came over a lot better than when we said something. So they checked me and I was 6 centimeters and they didn't feel the baby's head though. So they brought in an ultrasound machine and she had both her feet down. We didn't know she was a girl at the time, but both her feet were down. So she was a double foot length breech and they were like, cesarean. And we said, no, thank you. And so I signed against medical advice and the doctors were just like plastered to the wall, terrified. Like, you know, we don't feel comfortable doing this. And I was like, I know you don't, we do, you know, my midwife has experience with breech and I don't feel scared right now. And they wanted to inform me of my risks. And the midwife from the birth center said, I'm pretty sure she wrote a paper on the risks. I don't think she needs to hear it. you know, we'll let you know if plans change. So I spent a lot of time with, you know, my butt in the air trying to get her to turn. And I did. She actually turned a lot in labor and she went transverse and she went head down and then she went back to breech and she was just flipping all over. And finally we got her head down and they checked me and I was 8 centimeters. And they did an ultrasound to confirm, and she was head down, but my bag was bulging, and all of her cord was bulging before her head. Oh. So if the bag broke, the cord was going to come out. Mm-hmm. And so I sat with that for a little while, and I didn't have an IV. I didn't have a hep lock. I knew if that bag broke that they were going to need to knock me out to get her out. And so at that point, I opted for a cesarean. Because I wanted to be awake. I wanted to be present when my baby was born. And so we went in and it took a long time. I've been in cesareans before and I even paused and was like, is everything okay? Or, you know, how's it going down there? And she said, you know, we're having a really hard time reaching the baby. She's up really high now. So they ended up having to give me a J incision. So on the outside, they just, you know, did an incision above my pubic bone, but on my uterus, they had to cut up my left side in like a J fashion to reach her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I think her Apgar was like 2 when she was born. And they, you know, announced, you know, they told us that she was a girl and took her for, you know, to put her on some oxygen. And at 36 hours old, I was able to hold her for the first time with a lot of insistence from me. And shortly after that, she crashed. I'm still not exactly sure what that means to them, but that's what they told me. And she was sedated and put on a breathing machine. And we were told that she was too sick to be at that hospital, but too sick to transport. And that she probably wasn't going to live. And that if she did live, she'd probably be on oxygen the rest of her life. And I just didn't believe it. I mean, I believed it, but I think I was just in shock because we were told a similar thing when Ben, after he came out of his first surgery at 36 hours old, they thought he had a blood clot and he, you know, crashed and they had to sedate him and put him on the same breathing machine that breathes for him. And they didn't know if he was going to make it. And at the time, during Ben's, I had my chiropractor there. She was adjusting me, and she offered to adjust him, and we said, sure. And it looked like she was just kind of touching his neck a little bit. She didn't lift him or anything, no cracking, you know, nothing like that. And within a couple hours, he was off all his breathing machines, and, you know, and we snuck her in, of course. We just said, you know, can everyone step out so our friend can pray with us for our baby?
Yeah.
And, you know, cause she doesn't have privileges at the hospital.
Right.
And so I actually, that didn't even cross my mind when this was happening with our daughter. But I posted a picture of her x-ray of her lungs collapsed on Facebook and, you know, let everyone know what was happening to please like send love our way. And she texted me, the chiropractor, and said, please let me adjust her. I can literally see what's wrong. And we were nervous because every time anyone touched her, she would crash again.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally said, what do we have to lose at this point? And she came and adjusted her. And a couple hours later, she was off everything and she never had an issue since.
I got goosebumps, major head to toe goosebumps just now.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. She said it was her, I hope I don't butcher this word, the base of the neck, the axis. Is where every single nerve to every part of your body runs through. And it was kinked. It was like off center. And she adjusted that. And, you know, even if it just opened my eyes to chiropractic care. I went before, you know, like I always just thought it was like a back thing. If your back hurts, go to a chiropractor. But I mean, I've seen it help kids with bedwetting and speech problems. And, you know, just like it affects all the nerves. It helps all the nerves that work, you know, make your whole body function. So I always joke, like, if I ever had another kid, I would hire my chiropractor to attend my birth before
right.
I hired anyone else to attend. Like, I literally saved our kids' lives, I'm sure. When it happened with Ben, I'm such a skeptic. I was like, he was probably just about to get better, but, you know. But then after it happened with Gracie, I was like, hero. Yeah. So again, be careful what you say out loud. I mean, her whole pregnancy, I kept saying, I'm done. I don't want to be pregnant. And not that it's my fault, but you know, I'm sure it had to do with my iron level. Mm-hmm. You know, she was just like, better out than in, like there's nothing left for me in here.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I really feel like your intention can play a role too. And mm-hmm. I did. I felt done. I didn't want to be pregnant, even though I was like, stop saying that. I was like,
right.
But it's true. I'm so tired. yeah. So we had some whirlwind experiences and, you know, in a nutshell, we've got like two super pretty healthy kids right now. Ben still gets sick, you know, with like he got pneumonia last March and had to be hospitalized. And, but you know, for everything he's been through and everything he has, he will probably lead a pretty normal, happy life. You know, he's at preschool right now with all his friends and running and playing. And Gracie never had to be on oxygen again.
So I say wow a lot in these interviews, like a lot. And if I think it'd be funny to go back and do a wow count or something and what the top wow episodes are, this is easily going to be top three. Easily
yeah.
For all the wows, either I've said out loud or just mouthed or just thought. This is a top wower for me for sure. I appreciate you so much just in terms of the detail in which you shared everything, the truth and just the reality that you brought to what I'm sure just trying circumstances that test, you know, all parts of your being, you know, your mind, body, and soul. I'm curious if you feel like you can connect some of these dots and expand upon this a little bit. How approaching your pregnancies and births, you know, with home birth planning, with home birth team and support and mindset, how you feel like if it has impacted then how you've dealt with, you know, the multiple other hospital scenarios you found yourself in, you know, postpartum and through the first year of Benjamin's life and then through your birth with Gracie, you know, like you said, you know, you developed and established care with the birthing center so that you could have that midwifery approach and support. You know, do you feel like all of that has played a part or has helped you or supported you in all of what have been a lot of medicalized experiences?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, in my brain, I compartmentalize my birth experiences from my postpartum because like Ben, still to this day, was the most amazing experience of my life, just, you know, giving birth to my baby at home. And then all the other stuff was just another chapter that was a lot harder. But yeah, the building of the birth team, I mean, I talk to anyone I know who's pregnant or my clients about it. You know, that's the thing you have control over, is like surrounding yourself by people who believe in you and who have the resources that can tell you. Like my midwife said, you know, even though she was my midwife, she was like, I think you should develop care at the birth center. You know, I think that that would be a smart move. They can continue care if we needed it at the hospital. And not that she was abandoning me, you know, I still saw her for all my appointments, but she was like, you know, it would be an awesome asset to have if we had to go there. So just, yeah, having people around you who can give you your options, because I was a student midwife, but I couldn't think of it all, you know, even now as a midwife, if I had another baby, you know, it's really hard to midwife yourself and to like come up with all the ideas when you're like in the thick of it. So yeah, I mean, and I just really drill home to my clients, you know, when I was a child, there was a book, I think it was called Choose Your Own Adventure. And you get to the end of the chapter and it was like, do you want to go in the cave or the forest? Like turn to page 9 or 8, you know, and you could read the book a million different ways and, you know, pick which route you wanted to go. And I'm like, that's what birth is. You know, you can continue along. And then you might be faced with choices and you got to pick one and you don't know how it's going to all end, but you just, you know, make an educated guess basically and what feels right. And then you just go along and you don't know if your baby's going to be born at home or in the hospital or from your belly or from your vagina. Like that's not what makes an empowered experience. It's that knowing you had those choices and you got to make them, that things weren't just done to you or for you, or that you weren't, you know, sometimes the hospital will say, okay, this is going on. Here's your two options. And then, you know, your midwife might look over and go, or you could also do this or this or this, you know, like filling in the blanks. So just making sure that you, your voice is heard, because I, you know, feel like Gracie's birth was, a powerful experience too, like to be able to say no to the cesarean when I got there felt amazing because it wasn't right for me at the time. And being able to say, okay, I don't feel comfortable with this anymore. I want a cesarean. Like I'm the one who got to pick. And if I had just gone along with the cesarean in the beginning, I would have always wondered like, God, did I even give her a chance? She was turning so much. What if she could have turned head down, you know, or, yeah, I just would have second guessed myself the whole time. So yeah, I mean, I feel well-rounded as a midwife, having my baby at home and having my baby, you know, by cesarean. I feel like I can, you know, definitely empathize and relate to my clients better who have either experience. And advocating for yourself at the hospital, you know, I have that experience. And yeah, that's the thing that I drill home, is just when you leave your appointments, you should feel better, you know, about the team you've created around yourself. And, you know, just ask lots of questions, know what all your options are. And if you're not happy with your options, say so. You can do nothing. That is an option too. Yeah.
Sophia,
did that answer your question? Yes. I think I'm trying to remember.
And more than I could ever have wanted. You are so awesome. Wow. Yep. Another wow.
Yeah.
Well, another wow for the list.
You know, Sophia, throughout all of your storytelling, I have just been completely taken aback by your strength. And I know that there's a part of it that's like, I'm a mom. I'm going to do that for my kids. I'm going to show up no matter what. I mean, that's kind of what you said when you saw that single mom in the hospital with all the kids, like she's going to do it. The style in which you did it and the manner in which you showed up, is just absolutely incredible. With all those circumstances tossed your way, with everything, I just get a sense without even having been there myself, cause I'm just hearing your story. I just get a sense that, you know, you really were able to dig in and, just be there and do what you needed to do. And I'm so inspired by how you advocated for yourself, how you chose your options, like everything you were just saying. That is so incredible. And I'm so happy for all the moms and dads and families out there who are listening right now, who are just being filled up with their own sense of strength after hearing your story and hearing all of this. And it puts a huge smile on my face knowing that Benji's running around at preschool and loving life, and Gracie is just, you know, a beautiful baby girl, because boy, they certainly had a number of things going on in those early years. So I'm just, man, it's all incredible. So truly, truly, thank you so much for sharing and the way that you shared and everything. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm going to throw this out there too. Possible career paths for Benji or Gracie, chiropractors. They could go in business together. Benji and Gracie, chiropractics at your service. I think that'd be so cool.
I know who they can study with.
Sophia, thank you so much again for being on the show. I'm going to include links to your website and how people can get in touch with you and all that beautiful stuff. And for people who are living in your area who are looking for your services as well, so that they can connect with you.
SophiaBirth.com.
Yeah.
That's where you can go, right?
SophiaBirth.com. Right.
Beautiful. Thank you again, Sophia. We appreciate you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved. Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.